Welcome to Radio Naturopath, the talk show about health and natural medicine. This show will first be broadcast on Wednesday, July 23rd, 2025, on 91.7 FM WHUS Stores. I am Fran Storch, ND, naturopathic physician. My co-host Ron Meniza is still recovering from his cervical surgery. We're coming to you live from beautiful Mansfield Hollow, Connecticut. Comment below to let us know you're here and ask questions. You can also email me at radionaturopath@gmail.com. If you'd like to listen to the show at another time, you can check out our podcast at whus.org, iTunes, Spotify, Patreon, and Buzzsprout. You may also watch the recorded Facebook Live episode at FranStorchND for 30 days, and also on my YouTube channel at Radio Naturopath. The views expressed on this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of this station. The information presented on the show should not be construed as medical advice or direction. If you're having a medical condition, please consult with your physician. Me, I've still got the spinal stenosis. I already went to physical therapy, and my physical therapist was great. I'm already doing a whole bunch of exercises, and all we really did was look at the exercises I was doing, fine-tune them. I was doing knee-down side planks, and she said it's okay to do full side planks, and it's also okay to do front planks. So I got back into that, although I'm not holding the planks for very long. I'm holding the planks for at least for about 30 seconds. I've added windshield wipers, which are a game changer. Windshield wipers are where you take your knees and you just windshield wiper them side to side while you're on your back. And if you have a sore back for any reason, whether you have stenosis or you just have, you know, you've just been sitting in a chair for a long time, or you lifted something and your back is kind of sore, or you just want to refresh your back for whatever reason, windshield wipers with your knees are lovely. They just open up your back and they make you feel relaxed, and they're very nice. And, you know, if you're doing somatic yoga, if you're doing somatic exercises, are when you're doing exercises not only for the exercise and stretching, but also to release emotions and to release tension, release mind-body tension. And Debbie Daly, who I really like, who I do on YouTube, she has a lot of yoga flows that include somatic exercises. So there's going to be some light motion along with your pose. So if you're in a twist, you're going to be making your arm in a rainbow back and forth and doing stuff like that. And doing a gentle windshield wiper with your knees, that would be a somatic movement. If you were doing thread the needle, you'd be on all fours, and then you take your arm, raise it up, and thread it through underneath your arm, and then you lift it up again, and you do that a bunch of times. And that just gets the energy flowing. One of the things that my physical therapist, Mary, wanted me to do is she wanted me to do a bit of flossing, a movement of not just stretching of the femoral nerve, but flossing of it. And very simply, she said, sit on the side of the bed and lift your knee up and down, or extend your leg and flex your leg. And that will create some movement for that femoral nerve and get it moving through so it doesn't get static. So that was interesting, too. I would say that when I ride the bike, I feel somewhat better. I'm not completely pain-free. That, again, that radicular pain, the pain that started in my back, went down my leg, made it so I couldn't stand or walk, that's gone. But what I still have is numbness and tightness and some light degree of pain in the lateral left thigh. And that's still present, and you would expect that to be present because of the lack of space between the vertebrae at L2 and L3 and also L3 and L4. So where it was left with the neurologist was I'm in wait and see, and see if it stays, and I might need another cortisone injection in a few months. And I might also go ahead and explore, see if it's an option for me to get minimally invasive surgery, because when you get minimally invasive, the recovery is a couple of days. So if you're interested in that, that is something you can look into. I don't know if I'm a candidate for it. Dr. Melosi said I am not. So if I'm going to get that, I have to get another opinion, which I may do. So always a good idea to get more than one opinion. So we'll see what happens. If I do that, I'll let you know. Ron is getting better and better. He's moving more and more. He now has about an hour in him where he can be standing up and doing something active. He made his own radio show. And we're not making them together because usually we record them on Monday mornings, and he just couldn't get it together to do that on Monday morning. And when he's not doing that, I tend to do it a little on a different day so that my Monday mornings are free. So I have like a free day right before I have to go back to work. So shout out to Chris Kearns, who's listening. Hi, Chris. So thanks for listening. So he's getting better and better. It's a pleasure to see. I can't wait till he's backing up and he's on his bike, and he'll be so happy when that happens too. I also experience some anxiety. I've got a lot of things going on, a lot of pieces to put together. And I worry about, oh, am I going to make it through the workday? Am I going to be able to sit all that time? And I woke up pretty anxious this morning. Then I went out and got out on my bike. Now, when I say I'm riding my bike, I am not riding my bike far. We are going, I have not broken 10 miles yet. So the rides have been between 7 and 9 miles. And today we did 7. That's it. 7 miles around here, you do exert yourself because there are hills. So I'm climbing little hills, not crazy hills, but it's amazing that I'm able to do it after not being on the bike for 2 months, and I get right back on and I'm able to climb the hills. It's incredible. So I rode a nice 7 mile ride this morning. The earlier the better right now, because it's very hot outside. As you can see, I'm dressed for the beach. I'm not planning to go to the beach, but I may go and use my friend's pool later, which will be I haven't been in water yet. I mean, I did Epsom salt baths, but I haven't been in a pool or a pond or a lake or the ocean yet this year. And I would like to do that. And so it's super hot outside today. And so it's a great day to go to a pool. So I might do that later. So we'll keep you posted on how that's going. Exciting stuff. Okay. The other thing was I was taking acetyl L-carnitine, and I was taking it for a while, and I was starting to feel like I was having palpitations, and I get baby PACs, premature atrial contractions. I get them when I'm anxious. I get them with too much caffeine, dehydration, stress, and if I'm calm, they don't happen. So I was getting more of them, and then I read that I'm not sure if plain carnitine or acetyl L-carnitine, plain carnitine, yes, acetyl L-carnitine maybe, can increase palpitations. So I stopped the acetyl L-carnitine, even though it's a good nerve tonic. I'm taking other things that are nerve tonics, like phosphatidylserine, and I'm taking fish oil, and I could be taking kudzu. I'm not taking that right now, but I could be. And so I'm taking other things that are nourishing to nerves, benfotiamine, which is activated vitamin B1. And so I'm taking a bunch of things that can be helpful for nerve healing. So, and then of course, if I take curcumin is a wonderful anti-inflammatory. I have St. John's wort. I forget to take it. I should probably take the St. John's wort. Susan Weed said that when she had sciatica, she took lots of St. John's wort and it helped her sciatica. And St. John's wort is so simple. I have St. John's wort oil that I can be rubbing on my leg. And the other thing is with this discomfort, I noticed that if I ice the leg, it feels better after I ice it. So I need to just ice it more regularly. I did ice last night, and I will probably ice at some point today. So ice, if you have acute inflammation and pain in a part, ice for 15 minutes, take it off. You could wait an hour and do it again on that same part. You could do it a few times a day if you want to, but 15 to 20 minutes with an ice pack, probably no more than 20 minutes, especially if it's a big ice pack and it's very cold. And you don't want to get frostbite, but I do find it soothing. And then I have cooling salves that have menthol and camphor in them, and they are helpful. So it's weird to me because I was told that even if I have pain from the stenosis, you know, I have this nerve compression, which is manifesting as this left thigh nerve discomfort, I'm probably not going to damage the nerve more. Whatever you read about stenosis, if you're doing conservative methods to help stenosis, they suggest going for walks. They say, yes, you can go for a walk. If you have discomfort, you may have some pain. And my physical therapist said this to me. If you're on a hike and you're walking and then you feel discomfort, stop and bend down. You can lean against a tree, put your arms out, and bend forward. When you bend forward, you make more space in the spinal canal. So doing a forward fold like in yoga where you're standing up and you bend forward, or if you do caterpillar pose where your legs are out and you're bending forward, or even if you just hold on to a tree and lean your butt, you know, fold your body in half, or hold on to a bar, like we have a railing in the living room. If I hold on to that and lean forward, that's helpful too. And other ways to do that are to lie on your back and pull your knees into your chest. So you're creating space in the spinal canal, and then doing pelvic tilts inward. That helps to create space in that spinal canal. So that pelvic tilts and knees to chest are part of my PT series. So good idea to get some water down. This has electrolytes. I've got lime blueberry flavored electrolytes. You know what I could do? I could get unflavored electrolytes, drop them in, and squeeze some blueberry and some actual lime into my water. I might try that. But this is lime blueberry flavor. They're very nice, I must say. Okay, so what else is going on? So we were talking about ube versus taro root last week, and I wanted to talk about just taro root this time. Because I thought they were going to do a side-to-side comparison of the ube versus the taro, but we focused on the ube. And you know, the big thing about ube... The big things about ube that are really wonderful are that they have resistant starch, so that they're going to slow stomach emptying, and the starch will make it down. Some of it will make it down into your intestines and act as a prebiotic, so that you have something good to feed the probiotics that live in your intestines. And they also have that they're very dark. They're very purple, and so they have wonderful anthocyanidins in them that are wonderful antioxidants for all kinds of systems in your body, especially your cardiovascular system. This, for some reason, is your cardiovascular system. As I cross my hands and tap my shoulders, go figure. Cardiovascular system, I'm patting my heart now. What can I say? So I have ube powder, and I made matcha ube latte, although I'm trying to cut back on the caffeine. So I may just make a plain ube latte and see how that goes with just ube and almond milk and see what that tastes like. And like I said before, with ube, when you have ube powder, you may not need any sweetener. The ube itself is sweet, and it will sweeten your coffee. It'll sweeten your matcha. It'll sweeten your almond milk. You don't have to add any additional sweetener. It's very good. So, all right, but let's talk about taro root. And, you know, all taro and ube both come from Southeast Asia. So I guess there's a really... it's good growing conditions for these wonderful roots to develop resistant starch and for some of them to develop these anthocyanidins. So taro root tastes a little sweet, has a lot of nutrients, fiber, potassium, magnesium, and lots of other vitamins and minerals. It's a starchy root vegetable. It was originally cultivated in Asia, but now people have it in Glastonbury and Mansfield and other places in the world. It's got a brown outer skin and white flesh. It has purple specks and has a mildly sweet taste when you cook it, and it's similar to a potato, sort of between a potato and a sweet potato. It's a great source of fiber and other nutrients and offers a lot of health benefits, including improved blood sugar management, gut and heart health. So far, it's very similar to ube. All right. It has a lot of fiber and other important nutrients. Fiber, manganese, B12, E, potassium, copper, vitamin C, phosphorus, magnesium. It may help control blood sugar. So does ube. Because even though taro is a starchy vegetable, it has two kinds of carbohydrates that are beneficial for blood sugar: fiber and resistant starch. Fiber is a carbohydrate that's undigestible. So you eat it, it goes through your digestive system, it comes out the other end, although some of it gets munched on by your friendly gut bacteria. So it feeds it feeds the probiotics in your gut. And so fiber doesn't have an effect on your... This says it has no impact on blood sugar levels. I don't think that's true. I think it has a moderating effect on blood sugar levels, because it takes up space in your digestion and makes it so that, you know, you're not going to as readily absorb simple sugars when you have fiber on board. So I think it has a beneficial effect on blood sugar. It does slow down the digestion and absorption of other carbs. There you go. Preventing large blood sugar spikes after meals. When you eat a high fiber diet containing as much as 42 grams, that's a lot. 42 grams a day is a lot. You're going to be in the bathroom a lot if you eat that. I don't know if I make it to 42, but I do make it into the 20s a lot of days. You know, if I have a day where, you know, in the morning I'm having either, you know, non-dairy yogurt or oats with chia seeds and fruit and a sprinkling of healthy granola or muesli, that's a good bit of fiber right there. And then for lunch, like yesterday I had for lunch, I had beets and I had kimchi and I had a chickpea salad with some tuna. And that's going to be a lot of fiber. And then a great big salad for supper. And so, and then for dessert, I had a blueberry crumble. So fiber, fiber, fiber. So that's going to be 20 plus grams of fiber in a day. So taro has a special type of starch called resistant starch, which ube has as well. You can't digest that either, and it doesn't raise blood sugar levels. 12% of the starch in cooked taro is resistant, making it one of the better sources of this nutrient. So the combination of resistant starch and other fiber makes it a good carb option, especially if you have diabetes or you're just trying to regulate your blood sugar, or maybe you're trying to lose weight, right? Taro may reduce your risk of cardiovascular disease because it has fiber and resistant starch. And the reason that happens is when you eat more fiber, you tend to have lower rates of cardiovascular disease. For every additional 10 grams of fiber you consume per day, the risk of dying from heart disease decreases by 17%. And that's probably because fiber helps you to reduce your cholesterol levels. Research is ongoing for that. Taro has more than 6 grams of fiber in a cup, more than twice in a comparable serving of regular potatoes. So it's an excellent source of fiber. It also has the resistant starch, which lowers cholesterol and has been linked to a reduced risk of cardiovascular disease. Taro may have anti-cancer properties. Taro has plant-based compounds called polyphenols that have various health benefits, which can help to reduce cancer risk. Taro has quercetin in it, and I take quercetin as a pill every day. But the main polyphenol in taro is quercetin. So if you take if you eat taro, you're probably going to have reduced allergy symptoms. It can help with that. And quercetin can trigger cancer cell death and slow the growth of several types of cancer. It's also a great antioxidant, protects your body from free radical damage that's linked to cancer. There was a test tube study that found that taro was able to stop the spread of some types of breast and prostate cancer, but that was in the test tube, not in people. While early studies are promising, we got to research it a little bit more. It may help you with weight loss. Because it's a good source of fiber. And there's research that shows when you eat more fiber, you tend to have lower body weight and less fat. The resistant starch in taro may have similar effects. So having an ube or taro latte is a good idea. One study found that men who took a supplement with 24 grams of resistant starch before meals ate about 6% less calories and had lower insulin levels after the meal compared to control. Animal studies have also shown that when you give rats diets high in resistant starch, they have less total body fat and belly fat. This is partially due to the resistant starch, which increases fat burning in your body. So if you find foods with resistant starch in them, they can help you burn fat. So taro is an example. Ube is an example. Sweet potatoes are an example. If you take pasta and then you chill it, like you make pasta salad out of it and you cook the pasta, put it in the fridge. When you take potatoes or sweet potatoes or ube or pasta and cook them and then you put them in the fridge and chill them, you get more resistant starch. So this is a good time of year for potato salad. Potato salad, those potatoes will create resistant starch if they're sitting in the fridge. So taro is good for your gut. We already said it has a lot of fiber in it. Since it has lots of fiber and resistant starch, it may be good for your gut health. Your body doesn't digest or absorb fiber or resistant starch, so they stay in your intestines. When they reach your colon, they become prebiotics, food for the microbes in your gut, and they promote beneficial bacteria, your probiotics. So when your gut bacteria ferments these fibers, they create short-chain fatty acids, and those nourish the cells that line your intestines and keep them healthy and strong. There was a study that found that pigs that ate diets high in resistant starch had improved colon health, and it boosted their short-chain fatty acid production and decreased damage to their colon cells. Human studies have found that people with inflammatory intestinal disorders like ulcerative colitis tend to have lower levels of short-chain fatty acids in their guts. Some research suggests that consuming fiber and resistant starch can boost these levels and help protect against inflammatory bowel disease and colon cancer. So eat your resistant starch. So taro is easy to add to your diet. It has a starchy texture. It's mild. It's slightly sweet. It's similar to sweet potato. I find it's a little mealier. Some ways you can enjoy it. You can get taro chips at the health food store or the supermarket, or you can make them. You can thinly slice it and bake or fry into chips. Hawaiian poi. I don't know if poi is always made of taro, but it can be made of taro. So poi, you steam and mash the taro, and you make a puree out of it, and then you can serve it with other foods, and you can season it and stuff. You can make taro tea. You can blend it or use taro powder in boba tea for a beautiful purple drink, like you do with ube. And then you can make taro buns. You can bake sweetened taro paste inside pastry dough for as a dessert. You can make cakes with taro. You can mix cooked taro with seasonings and pan fry until crispy. That sounds good. And then you can put taro in soups and stews. You can cut it into chunks and put it into brothy dishes so you can eat it like you would eat a potato or a sweet potato. You can put it into your soup. So taro should not be eaten raw. It should only be eaten cooked. Raw taro contains proteases and oxalates that can cause stinging or burning in your mouth. And when you cook them, it deactivates these compounds. So that's taro. Taro is something you should only eat cooked. And nettles, you know, stinging nettles, you shouldn't consume stinging nettles unless they've been boiled or steamed or some other way that they've been heated, or you will get stung with formic acid. But yeah, taro is not to be eaten raw. You have to at least roast them or cook them or boil them. Taro has a smooth, starchy texture. It's mildly sweet. It can be cooked and enjoyed in both sweet and savory dishes. You shouldn't eat it raw. And it's a starchy root vegetable with a mildly sweet taste. And it has a lot of nutrients, including magnesium and vitamin C and E. It's a great source of fiber and resistant starch, which may account for many of its health benefits. It also has a variety of antioxidants and polyphenols that protect against free radical damage. You want to cook it before eating. So it's a nice thing to have. It's not as, in my experience, is not as dark purple. And taro can vary in how much purple is in it. Whereas ube is always very dark purple. If you get ube powder, it's this incredibly dark purple. And if you get taro powder, it's going to be a little purple-ish. And when you get actual taro root, you'll see that it's sort of pale, you know, off-white with purple specks in it. And I think it can vary in the amount of anthocyanin it has in it. So the amount of purple stuff that's in it, it'll vary how purple your taro powder is. But when you get taro if you get a taro latte at the cafe, generally the syrup is purple. So that's interesting. So there's taro. Okay, so let's talk on about other stuff. I might have a concern about ticks. There's a bumper crop of ticks this year. Lots of people are posting online. They're showing pictures of the ticks that attach to them, ticks that they found. One friend called it this little blankety blank attach. I found this little blankety blank on my skin. I won't repeat what blankety blank stands for, but it wasn't nice. And I don't blame him because, you know, it's not just about being, if he got bitten by a tick and you took the tick off and that was the end of it, that would be fine. But you can get a tick bite and you can have an allergic reaction just to the tick bite, the stuff that, you know, the saliva that's in the tick's mouth, because ticks spit anticoagulants into you so they can suck your blood and their proteins, so you can have an allergic reaction to those. That's number one. Number two, they can carry all kinds of diseases, including Lyme disease, Bartonella, Babesia, Anaplasma, Ehrlichia, Rocky Mountain spotted fever. Good times, right? So, and many ticks in Connecticut and in New England have those illnesses on them. And, you know, ticks, unfortunately, are the gift that keeps on giving. Generally, ticks, if they've got Lyme disease in them, Borrelia, there's not just Borrelia burgdorferi. There are many species of Borrelia, as I found out, that were hanging out in my body. Terrific, right? And that they can also have Babesia and Bartonella on board. So there's been a bumper crop this year because we didn't have a super cold winter, which would help to kill off some of the ticks. And we also had we had a lot of rain and a lot of dampness, and it's not hot enough here for the ticks to go and hide. So it's a little bit better on these really hot days because they are going to tend to crawl under the brush and not come out, because they don't do well exposed to extreme heat, and they don't do well uncovered. Like if you took a tick and you put it out on your kitchen table, it would die. It has to have moisture around it in order to survive. So that's why you find ticks in brush. And that's why, you know, people are cleaning out their gardens at the beginning of the year or at the end of the year when there's a lot of brush and there's a lot of leaves and they're cleaning stuff out. That's when they get bitten by ticks. But you can get bitten by ticks any time of year. And so anyway, so let's look at some homemade bug sprays, some homemade bug spray recipes that can help you with ticks and other things like mosquitoes. I mean, I sit in my yard. We have a lot of water. You know, we have Mansfield Hollow, the lake, not too far from our house. It's just down the hill from our house. And then we have vernal ponds, although we're not in the vernal time, but we keep getting all this rain. So we have some ponding water, and water's breeding ground for ticks and for mosquitoes. So there are oils from natural ingredients like peppermint, garlic, lemon, and thyme that help ward off insects. You can't say 100%. The research isn't there like it is for your DEET and your other chemical chemical bug repellents. But not everyone's comfortable using synthetic chemicals and pesticides to ward off bugs. So you want to use stuff that's environmentally friendly and natural and homemade. You can make some bug sprays at home, and they're generally safe for human use, and they can be effective. So what natural bug sprays can you use? The EPA requires most skin-applied insect repellents to be registered for both human safety and effectiveness. The agency has listed several natural ingredients in minimum risk pesticides. And so they're oils from cedar, citronella, geranium, peppermint, and soybean. All of those can be helpful. So you know what? I went out to pick raspberries, and picking raspberries is fraught because it's a perfect time to get hit by a tick. And before I went out, I put on some of my salve, one of my salves, and I'm using salves for my spondylosis that has menthol and camphor in it. And I didn't get any ticks. So menthol and camphor are going to be they're going to be repellent to ticks. Because they don't like peppermint, so they're not going to like the menthol. They're probably not going to like the camphor either. But that putting that stuff on was actually helpful. I noticed I kept checking myself for ticks and I didn't find any. Yay! Because who wants to go out and pick wild raspberries and then come back having been bitten by ticks? And also, Donna Dufresne's open at Windsong Farms in Pomfret, and you can go blueberry picking there, but I would recommend if you're gonna go blueberry picking, make sure you're wearing insect repellent when you go. So those ingredients, the citronella, cedar, peppermint, geranium, and soybean, they're generally safe for human use. The EPA doesn't evaluate them for effectiveness. So here's some popular ingredients that may help, but we can't say definitely, but they may help repel bugs. Citronella is a big one. So citronella gets used. Citronella has limonene in it, and citrus oils have limonene in them, and they're well-known insect repellents. They're often used in candles. So you can get big tiki torches that have citronella candles in them. You can burn the citronella in your yard while you're hanging out in your yard. And citronella is suggested to repel mosquitoes, and also fleas, aphids, mites, and flies. So there's a lot of things that can bite you out there. I mean, we get deer flies and horse flies around here as well. Garlic oil, it's going to make you smell like a salad, but garlic oil might help repel ticks and prevent infestations. The EPA lists garlic oil as a natural tick repellent for use in yards and gardens. So you can use garlic oil and you could spray it on your plants and you might get less ticks. Thyme essential oil. So thyme essential oil may help repel mosquitoes, ticks, and fleas, but it's not considered safe for use on your skin unless it is diluted. Then there's lemon eucalyptus. Lemon eucalyptus is a good one in particular for repelling mosquitoes. And so it's in a lot of insect repellents. It smells nice. And oil of lemon eucalyptus might be just as effective for repelling mosquitoes as DEET. There was a study that showed this. And DEET, of course, has health and environmental concerns, and citrus oils can repel ants as well. And we have this time of year, we have, if you leave anything sweet out, the ants are all over it. If I have my dessert and I leave the bowl on my nightstand overnight, in the morning, it's covered with the little baby house ants. And if you unfortunately happen to squash them, they smell like formic acid and formaldehyde, because they have formaldehyde in, and that formic acid is acid from ants. That's what it means. So the Centers for Disease Control recommends against using pure oil of lemon eucalyptus. It's not EPA approved and hasn't been tested for safety and efficacy. And so oil of lemon eucalyptus is not the same thing with lemon eucalyptus essential oil, which isn't effective at repelling mosquitoes. So if you're going to get a product, make sure you're getting oil of lemon eucalyptus, or the, if you're buying a natural incense repellent, make sure that it says on it that it has oil of lemon eucalyptus, not lemon eucalyptus essential oil. They're not the same thing. And then dill essential oil. So dill essential oil might help repel Lone Star ticks, which could transmit diseases like Lyme disease and tick-borne relapsing fever. So I didn't know that dill could do that. So using dill in a factory setting helps repel insects that may negatively affect food production. So minimal research has examined the insect repelling effect of dill essential oil in humans. It should be diluted, of course, before using on your skin. Then there's cinnamon oil. You don't want to use cinnamon oil without diluting it, or it will burn you. It may help repel mosquitoes. There was a study that concluded cinnamon oil helped repel mosquitoes in both lab and outdoors. Cinnamon oil may be effective in killing mosquito larvae as well. So if you have a little pond and you see the larvae swimming around, you can drop a couple of drops of cinnamon essential oil in it, and bye-bye larvae. Absolutely can cause skin reactions. I already said that. So make sure you dilute it before you use it on your body, or stick to using it in the yard or in ponding water. Lavender oil. It's not just for relaxation and sleep. It could also be helpful for repelling mosquitoes. It's usually considered safe for topical use without even diluting it. And then peppermint oil is a natural ingredient with minimal risks. Some research suggests that it may be useful in repelling several insects like mosquitoes, ants, flies, and lice, among others. If you buy your Dr. Bronner peppermint soap, it will recommend cleaning the area or spraying the soap in an area if you want to repel ants and flies and other insects. It says it right on the Dr. Bronner soap bottle. Another study concluded that peppermint oil might be effective at keeping spiders away. Keeping spiders away, I mean, if you're afraid of spiders, that's fine. If spiders are making too many webs in your house, that's fine. But remember, spiders are good. If you see them outside, you should leave them alone. And if you find a great big spider in your house, if you're not too afraid of it, it's really a good idea to rescue it and send it outside, because spiders are very helpful. They eat a lot of bugs and a lot of the pests that we don't want irritating us. So, and it's amazing how many bugs they eat. So having spiders around, they're actually a good thing. And I feel very sad because we get these daddy long leg spiders and they love to come in the shower. I guess they come up through the drains and then they set up. Ron had a glass straw that was sitting in the dish drainer, and there was a spider that had already gotten to it and was starting to make a web off of it. I mean, they seem to come near wet things, and yet if you turn the shower on and the spiders are in there, then it's all over for them. So they get in through the drains, and yet when they get washed away by the water spout, and then that's it for them. I don't think the eensy-weensy spider comes up the spout again, unless it hasn't been flooded out. So for safety tips, although many natural ingredients are considered safe for human use, you want to remember that not all essential oils are safe for topical use. If you're going to use essential oils on your skin, you need to dilute them with a carrier oil. Some oils, like citrus oil, can be phototoxic when applied directly to the skin. In other words, you go out in the sun, you're going to get more of a sunburn, and you can get bad burns and irritation. So a homemade bug spray recipe. Here's a suggestion. So you get a glass spray bottle, oil of lemon eucalyptus or lavender essential oil, and witch hazel. Then you mix one part of lemon eucalyptus or lavender essential oil with 10 parts witch hazel in the bottle. For every drop of oil, use 10 drops of witch hazel. Shake gently to mix and spray to apply. So witch hazel is very, very refreshing. I like to use witch hazel as an astringent to clean myself off. And when I put earrings on, I don't use alcohol. I use witch hazel to clean the earrings and to clean my earlobes before I put the pierced earrings in. So a bug spray recipe for your home or yard. So you need a glass spray bottle, lavender essential oil, oil of lemon eucalyptus, citronella essential oil, distilled water, and white vinegar. So you do 10 to 20 drops of each of the essential oils and 2 ounces of white vinegar, shake and spray, and off you go. So those are nice. You can make them for plants too. So cinnamon essential oil can damage the plants, so be careful with that. But it also can help prevent weeds from growing. So it could have other benefits for your garden. So don't spray it on the plants that you want. Spray it on the plants that you don't want. So for a DIY recipe that won't harm your plants, that you want to use a few drops of thyme oil, garlic oil, or oil of lemon eucalyptus with distilled water. And then mix that in a glass bottle and spray on your plants. And that will be safe for your plants. Other tips to prevent bug bites. Make sure you're wearing light-colored, loose-fitting clothing, especially when you're outdoors, and then you'll see the critters on you, and so you can flick them away. Make sure your clothing covers your arm, legs, ankles. How do people do that in this kind of weather? Do they know that it's 85 degrees out right now, and the feels like is, I'm afraid to find out. Let's see. Let's see what the feels, I'm really afraid to look. So right now, it's 86 degrees in Mansfield. Are you ready for this? The feels like is 96. So I'm not going out there in long sleeves. I am sorry. I'm going out there in a tank top and shorts, and not for long. And the feels like is 96. And do we have a dew point? I don't know if it tells me the dew point here. Let's see if it tells me the dew point over here. So let's see. Yeah, dew point 73 degrees. That's uncomfortable. It is really fuzzy out there. I went for my bike ride. I got out just before 9 o'clock, which wasn't too bad. It was still in the 70s at that time, but it was steamy. And when I got back, it was a little hotter than that. And I wasn't going to go out for long, so I purposely went out early so I would miss the heat of the day. That you don't want to be out in this exercising or working hard. So anyway, loose, light-colored, loose-fitting clothing when you're outdoors. Make sure your clothing covers arm, legs, ankles, and feet to avoid mosquito bites. Try to stay indoors at dusk and dawn, which is unfortunate because dusk and dawn are when you get to listen to the birds. But it's true, if you want to listen to the birds and be outside, you might want to wear bug repellent. The other thing that happens is when you're on a bike, there's these little tiny gnats that I don't think they bite you, but they fly around your face and they're really annoying. And I call them the 7-mile-an-hour bugs, because if you go 8 miles an hour or higher, they don't bother you. But 7 miles an hour and below, then they start flying around your face. So what's really great is when you're climbing a hill, and I'm no Tadde Pogacar, who's, a big guy, Tadde Pogacar, Matthew Vanderpoel, who else? Wout van Aert, and all the other guys. I'm not one of them, so I can't climb a hill. Depending on the hill, I'm probably not climbing it at 8 miles an hour unless it's a 0.5% grade. When you're, today I climbed a couple hills that were, 6-7%. And I did not climb it very fast. And the bugs came out and flew around my face. Very annoying. And so while you're, if that's you, sometimes you have to climb a hill and you're climbing it at less than 7 miles an hour. You might want to spray some bug repellent around your head and actually on your helmet. And then the bugs may stay away from you a bit more. But unfortunately, if you want to go listen to the birds, you kind of have to, if you don't want to be bitten by mosquitoes, then you have to put out the citronella and douse yourself in bug repellent and enjoy. And then after a while, it's like they don't care. They just bite right through it. And so you have to go in. And the other thing is you can, you can open the window and with the screen and just listen to the birds that way. You can use citronella candles when you're outdoors for additional protection. Avoid wearing scented lotions and perfumes outside. Although, if your lotion is scented with any of the oils we mentioned, like lavender or citronella, it's not going to be citronella, but lavender or peppermint, which you can get, then you might be okay. Then get rid of standing water in gutters, bird baths. How do you get rid of standing water in a bird bath if you want the birds to take a bath. So I think the thing to do there would be to change the water frequently, like change the water every day so that the mosquito larvae can't set up. Or if any set up, you'll blast them out and they won't go anywhere. And get rid of the standing water in planters and pots and wheelbarrows or, you know, buckets, whatever you have floating around outside. We have a stone that's in front of our, a decorative stone that's in front of our front porch, our little front porch. And it has a depression in it that fills up with water. And when it fills up with water, if it's the right time of year, we do get mosquito larvae in that. So sometimes I'll pour stuff in there and bye-bye mosquito larvae. What I could do cinnamon essential oil. You could do vinegar, you know. So vinegar and water. Just apple cider vinegar may help repel bugs, but that needs to be researched more. The most effective natural bug repellent. There's not a single most effective natural bug repellent. However, oils from natural ingredients like lemon, eucalyptus, peppermint, garlic, dill have all been shown to effectively repel insects. And don't forget Bio-UD, which is an extract of tomato. And that's hard to find. I was available a few years ago, but that was something. I don't know if you can get that anymore, but I still have a couple bottles that have the Bio-UD in it. It doesn't smell great. It smells like tomato leaves, which don't smell wonderful, but it's supposed to be as effective as DEET, but they don't mention it here. Can you spray vinegar on plants? There was a study that said that spraying acetic acid vinegar on apple trees helped improve their drought survival, but some environmental protection agencies noticed that acetic acid is also used to manage weeds and kill plants, so it might not be a good thing. So before using vinegar on your plants, consider spraying it on one small plant or one small leaf, one small part of the plant, and see what happens. So the bottom line is that insect repellents with natural oils like garlic, thyme, lemon, and dill are growing in popularity. Some types of natural oils may be as effective at repelling insects as some popular synthetic insect repellents. And you want to note that more research is needed to fully support the effectiveness and safety of insect repellents. If you want to make a homemade bug spray, make sure you know about the safety of your ingredients. Even natural ingredients can be helpful. Hey, this article was written on my birthday last year. That was nice. So we know it's pretty fresh. All right. So bumper crop of ticks. Now, let's go to should you drink electrolytes? I do. And the way I handle electrolytes is I have my everyday electrolytes, which are low in salt. They have more potassium and trace minerals and bamboo extract and stuff like that. And then when I'm on the bike, my electrolyte has more salt in it. And so that's when I'm actually exercising and sweating a lot, I'll use one that's meant for sport, for exercise. So should you drink electrolytes? Well, let's find out. So electrolytes are crucial for body processes like conducting nerve impulses, contracting muscles, hydrating, regulating your pH. You need enough electrolytes from your diet to keep your body healthy. It's the umbrella term for particles that carry a positive or negative electric charge. In nutrition, the term refers to essential minerals in your blood, sweat, and urine. When the minerals dissolve in a fluid, they form electrolytes, positive or negative ions in metabolic processes. So actual electrolytes are that are used in your body: sodium, potassium, chloride, calcium, magnesium, phosphate, and bicarbonate. The electrolytes are necessary for various bodily processes, including nerve and muscle function, and maintaining your acid-base balance and keeping you hydrated. So, they're crucial for keeping your nervous system and muscles functioning and your internal environment balanced. Your brain sends electrical signals through your nerve cells to communicate with the cells through your body. The signals are nerve impulses, and they're generated by changes to the electrical charge of the nerve cell membrane. The changes occur because of the movement of the electrolyte, sodium, across the nerve cell membrane. When that happens, it sets off a chain reaction, moving more sodium ions and the change in charge along the length of the nerve cell axon. The electrolyte calcium is needed for muscle contractions. So your neuromuscular junctions have calcium in them. And so it allows muscle fibers to slide together and move over each other as the muscle shortens and contracts. Magnesium is also necessary in the process so that muscle fibers can slide outward and muscles can relax after contraction. So if you do not consume enough magnesium, you will be more likely to get muscle cramps. So what we tell people is that you, in order to prevent cramps from starting in the first place, make sure you have a adequate magnesium on board. Are you eating enough leafy greens? Are you eating enough nuts and seeds? Are you eating enough foods that are high in magnesium? And if you can't quite hit it or you're sweating a lot, then you could take magnesium in pills. And I take magnesium in pills all year because it helps with calming. I feel like I burn through my magnesium pretty quick, so I take magnesium all the time. So magnesium will help to prevent it. Might not help it while you're having a cramp in the moment. For cramps in the moment, then you're looking at doing a counter irritant like cayenne or pickle juice or a homeopathic, like a mixed homeopathic for cramping. But pickle juice and cayenne can be helpful if you're having a cramp right now. But that's why when I'm outside, when it's hot like this and I'm sweating a lot, I don't have plain water. I have electrolyte water because salt and sugar help water to get into your system faster than plain water. So anyway, calcium for muscle contraction, magnesium for muscle relaxation, and they balance each other. All right. Water must be kept in the right amounts, both inside and outside the cell in your body. Electrolytes, particularly sodium, help maintain fluid balance through osmosis, which is a process where water moves through the cell wall of a cell membrane from a dilute solution, more water and fewer electrolytes, towards a more concentrated solution where there's less water and more electrolytes. That's osmosis. That prevents cells from bursting from being too full or shriveling up due to dehydration. So, and also your pH level needs to be balanced. So you have to regulate your internal pH, which is a measure of how acidic or alkaline a solution is. In your body, it's regulated by chemical buffers, or weak acids and bases, which help to minimize changes in your internal environment. Your blood is regulated to stay at a pH of around, it's a really narrow range, it's slightly alkaline, it's just over 7. 7.35 to 7.45, that's it. If you're below that, you're in metabolic acidosis. If you're above that, you're in metabolic alkalosis. And your body can't become, it can't function if you're in acidosis or alkalosis. So you have to have the right balance of electrolytes to maintain your pH level. Electrolyte imbalances, sometimes electrolyte levels in your blood can become too high or low, which can cause an imbalance. Disturbances in electrolytes can have a harmful effect on your health and can even be fatal. Electrolyte imbalances often occur due to dehydration caused by excess heat, vomiting, and diarrhea. This is why it's important to be mindful of replacing lost fluids when it's hot or when you're sick. Some conditions can increase the risk of electrolyte imbalances, like malnutrition, kidney disease, endocrine disorders, gastrointestinal conditions, inflammatory bowel disease, IBS, lung conditions, and even heart problems. If you have a mild electrolyte disturbance, you probably won't have any symptoms. However, more severe imbalances can give you fatigue, muscle weakness, nausea, headache, and confusion. If you suspect you have an electrolyte imbalance, you should discuss that with your doctor. Do you need to replace electrolytes lost in sweat? I'm going to go with yes. When you sweat, you lose both water and electrolytes, especially sodium and chloride. As a result, long periods of exercise or activity, particularly in the heat, can cause significant electrolyte loss. It's estimated that sweat contains about 40 to 60 millimoles of sodium per liter on average, but the actual amount of electrolytes lost through sweat can vary from person to person. Some people are salty sweaters and some people are less salty sweaters. In the United States, the maximum recommended intake for sodium is 2,300 milligrams a day. The average daily consumption of sodium for most Americans is like 3,400 milligrams a day, so most people don't need to replace their sodium from sweat. But some people, like endurance athletes who are exercising regularly or those who exercise in extreme heat, may want to consider drinking electrolyte-induced enriched sport drinks to replace the losses. I know that I feel better if I do electrolytes. If I'm feeling a little bit lightheaded, remember what we said last week, that men, when they exercise intensely, their blood flow tends to congregate internally, so it goes to their core, it goes back to the core of their body. So they tend not to get as lightheaded as women, because our blood flow, when we exercise intensely at the end of a workout, it tends to go to the periphery. And a quick way to get the circulation back to your core is cold water, is a cold drink. And so I try to remember that. And as soon as I get in the house, before I even grab my protein shake, I grab some cold electrolyte water with ice in it and drink that. And I do find, you know, because, you know, I have a little tendency to be a little bit dysautonomic and to have a little bit of issue with lightheadedness. And so I frequently drink electrolyte water. I drink the everyday electrolyte water a lot of the day. I will have some times when I just drink the plain water, but I generally drink electrolyte water with a little bit of the light electrolytes in it that has more, has less sodium and more potassium and other minerals. And, you know, that way I absorb my water better. And one of the things that my naturopath Marissa said to me was that if I drink the regular electrolyte water, that I might pee less. You might urinate less because you absorb more of your water. So it's true. If I drink plain water, I'm in the bathroom more. That is true. So where can you get your electrolytes? You get sodium from a lot of stuff. I mean, any processed food's going to have sodium in it pretty much. Foods that are pickled, rice, pasta, condiments can have sodium in them. Sodium chloride, which is salt. So your table salt, your Himalayan salt, your Celtic salt, whatever kind of salt you're using, has chloride in it. Potassium is in all of your produce, your fruits and vegetables, bananas, broccoli. Everybody's like, well, you know, bananas are super high in potassium. They're relatively high in potassium. Coconut water is really high in potassium, and a glass of coconut water can have as little, can have 450 to 700 milligrams of potassium in it, which is a lot of potassium. But if you eat a good complement of many fruits and vegetables, you're going to be fine for potassium. There's lots of potassium in those foods. And then magnesium, any leafy green. This mentions spinach because spinach is very dark. Anything that has a lot of chlorophyll in it. Chlorophyll is the compound in plants that enacts photosynthesis, which is how plants make food for themselves. And chlorophyll has its central element, magnesium. So anything with chlorophyll in it is going to have a lot of magnesium in it. And if you eat lots of leafy greens and green vegetables, you're going to get a lot of magnesium. And if you don't quite make it for magnesium, or if you sweat a lot, you could take magnesium in supplements. But spinach and nuts are good sources of magnesium, and so are all the other wonderful leafy greens that are available. You know, you can get your wonderful organic unsprayed natural leafy greens at many farmers markets. I love arugula this time of year. I get the spicy salad mix from some of the farms out in this area. I like the kick from the mustard greens and the arugula and the other spicy elements. Calcium you're going to get from dairy products, from fortified dairy alternatives, and also leafy greens have plenty of magnesium. So you don't necessarily have to have dairy to get your calcium on board. All right. Should you supplement your diet with electrolytes? Some people drink electrolyte water or supplement with electrolytes like sodium and calcium to ensure they get enough. But if you have a balanced diet that has sources of electrolytes, that's going to be enough for most people. Your body can typically regulate electrolytes efficiently and keep them at the right levels. But if you're sick, you have vomiting and diarrhea, where you have a lot of electrolyte losses, supplementing with a rehydration solution that contains electrolytes can be useful. And the amount you'll need to consume will depend on your losses. Read the instructions, but also just see how you feel. And for me, where, you know, if I'm at work and I'm talking a lot and I'm getting excited, I'm going to be dehydrating somewhat just from talking. And so that's why I always keep water and often electrolyte water on my desk. And I use the everyday electrolyte blend. I don't, when I'm in the office. Or, you know, just around the house. Right now, this glass has everyday electrolytes in it. But sometimes I'll feel like I just want a glass of plain water, and I'll drink that then. Although last night I was drinking a lot of water. I was in the bathroom more, and I probably will do electrolytes next time to see if that calms down. So their electrolytes are minerals. They carry an electrical charge when they're dissolved in water. They're vital for your nervous system, your muscles, maintaining an optimal body environment. Most people meet their electrolyte needs through a balanced diet, though the imbalance can occur if you're sick or you sweat excessively. If you think you have an imbalance, then talk to your doctor about it. So just be careful when you're buying electrolytes. If you're buying electrolytes for every day, make sure they don't have a huge amount of sodium in them, that they're for every day. There's certain brands that cater to everyday electrolyte consumption that you can just have in your water so that you absorb your water better, but aren't super high in sodium. The ones that are higher in sodium, you mostly want to use for working out. Because people, electrolytes have become very popular, and I went and bought a stash of them, and then I found that most of the ones I bought were really for working out. And so I don't drink them for every day. I gave the boxes to Ron. They had some good flavors, too. One of them was peach. But now that I'm on the road, now that I'm working out, I could probably grab one of those. But they came in nice flavors. So, all right, let's see what else we've got for you. Oh, Susan Weed, who's a herbalist. She's already 80 years old. God bless her. God is bless her. So she thinks you shouldn't drink plain water ever, that you're better off drinking herbal infusions, and that plain water is actually dehydrating. I think she has a point. So why does she have a point? Because when you drink plain water, especially if there's not a lot of minerals in it, it's going to go right through. You're not going to absorb it as well. I mean, maybe even the older you get, your body's not going to glom onto the electrolytes. That doesn't have electrolytes to glom onto, so it's not going to absorb the water as well. And if you drink a lot of water, your body's going to just feel like, I have too much water on board, so it's going to send it out the other end. And last night I was drinking plain water, and I was in the bathroom a lot. So she doesn't drink plain water. She only drinks herbal infusions. So I'm not saying that you should necessarily do that. You might want to do a little bit of electrolyte. You can get electrolytes that have no flavoring in them and that you just put in as drops. And then if you want to flavor your water on top of that, you can add your own fruit or flavoring to it. So that's another option. But if you want to do herbal infusions, you could be sipping on some herbal teas. And if you want to drink them cold, you certainly can. Like, this is a great time of year to be doing nettles or some tea that has peach infused into it. And if you want to drink things that don't have caffeine in them, you can make rooibos. I have a lovely blood orange rooibos tea bag that I cold brew in the fridge, and then I drink it, and that's great. It has no caffeine in it because I'm trying to cut back on caffeine because I've been having some anxiety, and I think the caffeine aggravates that, and I'm not tolerating caffeine well. If you do tolerate caffeine well, then you can sip on oolong or black or green tea or white tea through the day if you want to. I love the flavor of peach, so I get natural peach flavoring and I'll put it into things, or find an herbal tea that's a blend of herbs and it has peach in it. But if you drink nourishing herbal infusions, that's what Susan recommends. So we're talking about things like nettles and oat straw. If you're a perimenopausal woman, you have problems with your blood pressure, you could do linden, which is a great anti-inflammatory, and it's also good for blood pressure. So you could sip on that through the day. But I think nettles and oat straw, and you could even throw rose hips in. Those are great things to sip on through the day. You put in an ounce of herb into about a quart of water. You pour boiling water over. And what she says to do is to let it steep for 4 hours. And then you can drink it hot or cold. It's up to you. So that's the recommendation. I thought it was interesting that she said that plain water is dehydrating. And I don't know that that's quite true. But the point is that if you drink plain water with nothing in it or doesn't have a lot of electrolytes in it, you might not absorb it as well. And you'll absorb it better if there's something in it. Because when you use herbal infusions, there's going to be minerals and there's going to be electrolytes and a little bit of carbohydrate. And you'll absorb the water better. I have to go because we're out of time. You have been listening to Radio Naturopath, the talk show about health and natural medicine. I am Fran Storch, ND, naturopathic physician. You can email me with questions and comments at radionaturopath@gmail.com. If you'd like to listen to the show at another time, you can check out our podcast at whus.org, iTunes, Spotify, Patreon, Buzzsprout, and YouTube. You may also watch the recorded Facebook Live episode at Fran Storch, ND. The views expressed on this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of this station. The information presented on the show should not be construed as medical advice or direction. If you're having a medical condition, please consult your physician. Thank you for listening to Radio Naturopath, your show where you can learn about the best of science and nature. We'll be back with more Radio Naturopath next week at 91.7 FM, WHUS Stores and WHUS.org.